All right, guys, welcome back to Beyond the Barbell, brought to you by Reebok, the official outfitter of CrossFit and the CrossFit Games. I am Ben Alderman.
And I'm Blair Morrison. We are blessed to be joined by Chad Vaughn, ex-Olympian, U.S. snatch or clean and jerk record holder, and friend of the program through producer Phoenix. This is the guy that brought Phoenix up in weightlifting, so we heard all about him, pretty much a legend. Very happy to have you, Chad.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. I look forward to talking to you guys.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about what brought you out to Miami this weekend for Wadapalooza.
Yeah, the biggest thing, I'm a big part of Power Monkey Camp and Power Monkey, the company, and, we're here basically teamed up with Reebok, and I've been really fortunate to team up with Reebok. They've been really good to us at camp and everything else, and so they've got us set up with a rig, over here by one of the big stages, and just showing people how to, use the ring thing that we have, and Wadapalooza actually put a picture of me up the other day of me standing in front of a guy doing an Iron Cross, and so like an Olympian teaching the Iron Cross, but he's a weightlifter. And so, of course, I don't know, I'm not an expert in gymnastics, but being around Dave Durante and Shane DeFreitas, who's over there, those guys are Olympians as well, and just hearing them talk and learning gymnastics and ring thing stuff and muscle up stuff from them, I'm basically just repeating, what I've learned from them. And so, yeah, we're having a good time, and excited to be here. It's first time I've been to Wadapalooza, and absolutely did not know what I was getting into, but I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we were talking about how, of the three of us standing up here, Chad and I have very similar skin types. Ben's got that Asian Samoan type influence in him, so he can handle the sun a little better than we can. I want to go talk
that didn't
about.
Even cross my mind. I have no idea what you guys are talking about as far as sun. Like it didn't even. Like yeah. I don't even think about sunscreen or what. I'm just like.
It's like you've been window tinted. Like
yeah,
you're protected.
It doesn't even cross my mind that you guys are thinking of that.
So I'll talk a little more about Power Monkey. Was that something you were a part of from the beginning, or did they bring you on as an expert?
Yeah, so Power Monkey, the company, is something that Dave and the other Shane that we have in Power Monkey and Dave's wife, Sadie, took on, I don't even know how many years ago now. And they started off with equipment, with rigs, and the ring thing was a big part of that, T-bars. And then Dave had this vision of running a camp, an adult fitness camp that lasts just about a week long. And he got the vision from being a young kid in gymnastics, and they always go to summer camps, And so there was this place that he went to, and after he got done going to those camps and kind of competing, he started coaching at that camp. And so getting into the CrossFit community, that became, something that he came up with. And, yeah, from the beginning, he kind of reached out to me and said, I'd like you to run the weightlifting part of it and come on board, and we can use both of our names to help promote this thing. And initially, honestly, I always tell people that I was like, yeah, Dave, I'll do it, I'll follow you, whatever you need me to do, just let me know. But I did not think at all for one second it was going to work. So it's been really awesome to watch. We're going to be on camp number 7 now here coming up in April, and it's been really awesome to watch it grow and just really take on a name of its own. And initially, people were there.
It's a great name, by the way.
It's a beautiful name.
It's very,
absolutely.
Very good name.
Yeah. But, people were initially there, and they got there from knowing Dave or knowing myself. And definitely the last 3 or 4 camps, a lot of participants don't even know who we are. They just know Power Monkey. So it's been really awesome to see that change and that growth.
I got to ask, how has the rise of CrossFit's popularity affected you and your brand and allowed you to maybe develop something from what your passion is, and that's weightlifting?
It's given me a path in life, to be honest with you. It's given me a brand. Where before I never wanted to be a coach, I didn't think that I would be a coach. I had no idea what I was going to do. But, the fact that CrossFit has created, such awareness for Olympic lifting, and so many people are interested in Olympic lifting and being better at the Olympic lifts and knowing the Olympic lifts, and whether that's to be better at the sport of Olympic lifting or whether that's to be better for CrossFit. And so, because of that, this is the path that I've been able to take, is to be a coach and to be a teacher and to be an information source within this community.
Can you talk about the transition from your life as an athlete to that, like to this new life path as a coach? Because I would think going from the Olympics, right, being that level, and then having to, you know, kind of almost throttle down a little bit and shift. That's like I said, it's a transition to say the least. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's been kind of an organic transition, you know, kind of a long transition. And I'm, you know, gotten to where I'm competing less and less. You know, honestly, I'd like to get to where I'm competing a little bit more and to get back up to a decent level as a master athlete. You know, there's some goals that I have and things that I want to do. But, you know, definitely somewhere along the way, the focus and the priorities have switched, you know, to mostly coaching and teaching. And it's absolutely fulfilling in a different way being a coach and a teacher versus being an athlete. And really, I think it's probably more fulfilling. And I think that's why it's made it easier for me to make that transition, because as an athlete, you know, as an elite athlete, you are helping people in that they are motivated by you, they're watching you, they're inspired by you and all that stuff, but you're not reaching out and doing anything to make changes in them and to help them, as opposed to you are as a coach. And, you know, as an elite athlete, you're very inward and very selfish and focused on yourself. And so now you know, there's that opportunity for me to use what I learned and to use what I know and, you know, help anybody that's interested.
We've heard that from a couple people in different arenas, that in order to be the best of the best, like Matt Chan and Chris Spieler, when they're stealing balloon animals from the VIP area. Yeah, we see you guys.
What's going on down there, guys?
What is going on down there?
Chris Spieler, Matt Chan just booking it.
When you're an elite athlete or an elite entrepreneur or a, you know, CEO of a corporation, whatever it is, politician, you have to be selfish to be elite, right? To be that level of a performer in whatever field it is. We heard that from Rich Froning. We're hearing that from you. We've heard that from other people on this show. So what you're saying is, being that elite, it's almost like you're, well, not sacrificing fulfillment, but it's not as fulfilling as when you get to kind of create that in other people, right?
Yeah, for me, it definitely feels different. You know, I, at this point, I definitely feel, you know, reaching out and helping others is, I think, something that we all have inside of us and that we want to do. We all want to be a part of something where we're helping someone in some way. I feel like every human has that in them. And at the same time, you know, looking back, again, I was selfish, but does it have to be that way? I don't know. I think I could have been a little bit different, and I think that, you know, others can be a little bit different and still be very successful at what they're doing. And in fact, whenever I, after I had my daughter Ella, my wife and I had my daughter Ella in 2009, I came back a couple years later, because that was shortly after the Olympics in 2008, and I came back in 2011, and I was able to work myself back up and lift my best total ever. And so I was at that point working out three and four days a week, as opposed to 7 to 9 times a week. And my priorities were different. So, you know, there does have to be that phase of where you're very specific and you're very zoned in on yourself. And but at some point, I think you're going to find your greatest ability to compete and all that stuff by, you know, being more open and just less, I guess, less selfish and less zeroed in on yourself.
Do you think some of that is just like age and maturity, or is it more about reaching a certain level of personal success where you can then reflect on what you did right and what you did wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, experience. I think it's a little bit of both, but, you know, more than that, I think it's. I'm not saying that I wasn't a good person before, but I think it's mostly about just being a good human being, just being, you know, pleasant for other people to be around, just being, you know, having a good attitude. And especially as an athlete, we're watched by, I always forget that I'm watched by people all the time. And even people in my gym, they'll come to me and say, oh, hey, you put this on Instagram, I saw that, hey, good job, or whatever, you know. And I'm like, I forgot that I put that on there, you know, because I'm just putting out content. I'm not really aware. I forget that people are actually paying attention, you know. So we're examples, and I think that we have a responsibility to make sure that we have a good attitude on a daily basis and that we're doing things in a positive way.
Well, I got to ask, you've been on both sides of the platform now, right? Like you've been approaching it and you've been watching your athletes from the other side. What is the most important thing or most important attribute you see in somebody who wants to become a good weightlifter?
Great question, Ben.
Yeah, that's a loaded question right there.
It's a loaded question. It's open-ended. We like open-ended questions because it allows you to have time to be able to formulate a thought and really express something that's deeper than just the surface level. So
I think what I'm hoping he's going to say is that ideally you should be 6 feet tall, about 195 pounds, skinny ankles.
Fair skin.
Yeah, fair skin.
Fair skin, yeah. I don't know what that's good for.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a good question. And you know, we were just talking right before we started about a little bit about Phoenix, and you know, really the biggest attribute that I think he has, and that anyone that wants to be the best that they can be at anything, is a tremendous amount of personal responsibility. So, you know, I can be Phoenix's coach, or I can be your coach, or I can be your teacher, and you know, I can give you all the information I have. I can give you everything that I have. But unless you have the personal responsibility to apply it over a long period of time and make the changes that need to be made and to spend the time that needs to be spent. You know, for myself, for example, one of the probably the biggest thing that made me as successful as I was as an athlete was personal responsibility and the fact that I just stuck with it. I saw so many athletes that were, in my opinion, far more talented than myself just hang in there, and then they stopped, and I was still going. And then others came along, and they stopped, and I was still going. And so that's what really allowed me to continue to progress and to stay on top and to ultimately do what I did. So, you know, personal responsibility, sticking with it, and within that personal responsibility, making sure that you are spending the time doing the right things, like, you know, that you're not skipping steps. And that's what we talk at Power Monkey so much about. All the coaches are, if you're not mobile enough, for example, to create this position that I want or to go through the range of motion that I want you to, well, we need to spend time making sure that that's achieved first before we move to the next step.
So let me ask you a follow-up to that, because I think that what you're touching on is that what happens between the ears is far more important than maybe the physical gifts that you're given, you know, when you come out of the womb or whatever and you develop as you know, as you're growing and whatnot. And I get that, and I hear that from a lot of people. And you said something. You said you saw people who are far more talented than you, or you would consider them far more talented than you, but they just didn't have it, that level of personal responsibility. Now, when you look at somebody who's maybe far more talented than yourself, how do you make that distinction? Why are you saying that you see somebody who's far more talented? What attributes do they possess that you're seeing that you maybe would like, but they didn't have the level of personal responsibility, so you had to overcome that with what was up here?
Yeah, I guess for me, especially, you know, within weightlifting, just seeing and knowing how much stronger they were than me, just physically stronger. And when I say stronger, I mean like in the press, in the squat, in the deadlift, the fact that they were doing, you know, sets of 5 or sets of 10 with weights that I couldn't even do for one in those specific strength movements. But, you know, I was able to continue to beat them because I paid attention to little things that were important, like flexibility, mobility, and technique. And so when you're that strong, obviously you can get away with a little bit of inefficient movement and some lacking mobility or whatever, and kind of muscle through things. And so, you know, if they would have took it upon themselves to spend the time to make those base changes, you know, and maybe a little bit more time learning how to compete if that's what they needed. But, you know, the biggest thing, spending a little bit of time making those base changes, then I think that they would have been in a position to lift more than me.
That's really interesting. So that's not what I was expecting you to say. So basically what you're saying there in that explanation is that there's guys that are physically stronger in what is generally considered a strength sport, right? How much weight can you lift? But the little things, the technique, the efficiency, the mobility, allow someone like yourself who is less strong than them by a considerable margin in measures like the squat or the press to outweightlift them, to lift more weight than the stronger guy. That's crazy. I mean, it makes sense, but you would think that at that level, guys wouldn't leave those stones unturned.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, it's not, it's, we're talking about little, you know, little things that maybe, that, especially before CrossFit came around and before people really got into trying to learn just deep details and everything and technique and position and gymnastics or weightlifting or whatever else it is. You know, these are things that were just kind of overlooked. And so you have to understand, you have athletes and coaches putting athletes on general programs. So I'm trying to get you stronger in the squat, in your clean deadlift, your snatch deadlift, your overhead position, and within the actual snatch and clean and jerk. And, you know, without understanding that there are little things that maybe need to be adjusted inside of this general program that I'm giving you, like extra mobility, or maybe I need to give you extra upper body work, or, you know, whatever it is that athlete needs.
Can you maybe generalize the top-tier CrossFit athlete's weightlifting technique and just speak to how efficient it is comparison to maybe the top-tier weightlifting athletes?
How bad of lifters are we?
Are we bad? But are there guys that are embodying maybe pretty proficient technique, or are we still got a long way to go?
Well, I mean, that's going to be a pretty loaded question as well. I think overall it's really good. What I feel like I've observed over the years, and when I first came into CrossFit, I guess I first was introduced into CrossFit in 2008, and then I started paying a lot of attention to becoming really a pretty big fan of CrossFit and the games and everything else in 2010. What I feel like I observed, like at regionals and the games over the first maybe 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 years, was a steady increase in movement, a steady increase in technique and position and quality. And then what I think I've observed over the last couple years is that quality is coming back down a little bit. And I don't know why it is, but maybe just it's a kind of, you know, people getting ahead of themselves, maybe kind of skipping steps or whatever, or just not completely paying attention. I know these athletes are getting so much stronger, and maybe that has something to do with it as well. And they're really continuing to lift more weight, but at the same time, I feel like the technique is a little less. One of the major things that I feel is lacking, the most important thing that I feel is lacking with most elite CrossFitters, even elite CrossFitters, is they're just not even holding their back tight from the floor. So that's the very first, most important thing. And obviously that comes from muscle memory of not doing that with low weight, high reps, or medium weight, high reps. And I get it. I'm a CrossFitter as well. I've done a lot of CrossFit over the last 6 or 7 years. And I get that you can't completely brace yourself while you're breathing at the same time. But my point is that you have to, when you're working heavy snatch and clean and jerk, you have to focus on that. You have to make sure that you're locked in and that you're creating strength with that locked in position and awareness. And I know for a fact, because I do it myself, you'll be able to lock in really well even while you're breathing if you train yourself to do that over a long period of time. So will these guys and girls slow down enough to make that change? I don't know. But, you know, like I said, I feel like what I've observed over the last couple of years is maybe it's inching back a little bit.
That's really interesting. Because I heard from weightlifters that it was progressing the right direction. It's the first time I've heard that it's starting to slip back. But that would make sense. Question I had, kind of piggybacking on that, the biggest difference I see between Olympian level weightlifting and like world class CrossFitters is speed. Like the guys I watched on YouTube, on the Olympics, yourself included, is just like incredible speed.
Especially that third pull right under the bar. Like,
yeah.
It's insane.
Just insane. Like almost like where you have to go into slow motion. You can't even see it between frames. Is that genetic? Is that like the way people's tendons and muscles are built, or is that something that can be taught?
I think some of it goes back to what I was talking about before. If we think about the last part of the lift, and we'll just say the snatch, which is getting under the bar and locking it out overhead, talking about the speed there, you can't move as fast as you can under the bar unless it's a reaction, first of all. So it's got to be a reaction. It's got to be a reaction from a fully extended, aggressive position. So you got to be very fully extended, and you have to be aggressive. And for most people, you're going to be able to put the most power on the bar if you're contacting the body with a straighter arm or with an arm that is very tight and locked in, whether it's bent or not. And what comes before that is a good position at the knee. What comes before that is a locked-in back, a locked-in core, a locked-in body from the start position. So if you're lacking tension from the start position, you're basically going to be having to make up for that throughout the entire lift. So you're not going to be able to move as fast through extension and put as much power under the bar, and therefore you're not going to be able to get under the bar as fast.
So you're saying speed boils down to, it's a reaction to tension. So the more tension you can get at the top, which requires you to have tension from the bottom, the faster you can move under the bar.
You're creating a more powerful position if your back is locked in. You're tying the hamstrings in more as you go throughout that pull. So, you know, focus. I talk a lot about focus. That's what I talked about in the seminar last night, was moving a barbell with intention. And if you're just going walking up to the bar and you're performing a snatch, and that's what you're focused on, if you're focused on just getting under the bar, then you're missing the boat quite a bit. It can be done better than that.
But there's got to be some guys that are just slow, right? Like athletes that just don't have the explosivity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there are some athletes that are just kind of slower, and I think that it can be taught. But the first thing that I'm going to examine is that, are they doing things the way that I want them to be done before I really make a decision on whether they're fast or slow or how fast or slow they are.
So speed is predicated on good position, right? Like, you can't be fast like a weightlifter unless you have those great positions.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of things to think about, positioning, start positions, whatever. Then there's guys who think they've mastered it enough, and they've got to turn to other means in order to get faster or stronger. And the existence of performance-enhancing drugs, PEDs, steroids in your sport, our sport, powerlifting, any fitness sport, bodybuilding if you want to call it that, I mean, it's almost a given. How prevalent is or are steroids within the world of weightlifting, of top-level weightlifting?
Yeah, you know, I heard you guys talking about that with Easy a little bit before, and, you know, I kind of agree with something that was said, in that, you know, unless you see the person doing it, or unless they've tested positive, we can't just sit here and speculate who's taking it and who's not. I will tell you that, you know, back in the day when, I say back in the day, it wasn't that long ago, but whenever I was competing internationally a lot, I mean, I can remember back in, like, 2002, 2003, you know, being at Worlds and just some of the athletes that were taking drugs were openly talking about it. You know, from these particular athletes were from other countries. And so you have to understand, especially some of these other countries that are on them and that say that they're on them, they don't see it as anything wrong because it's part of their system. So they're you know, whoever is in charge of their program, and that's part of their program, they're basically spending money trying to figure out how to get these enhancements in their bodies and to get them to pass the test. And they're trying to figure that out, as opposed to, like, what I was brought up through being, you know, overseen by USADA, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. I was tested once a month, every month, for about 10 years, and also at every single competition that I went to. And so we're basically spending money, lots and lots of money, trying to make sure that we were clean and that we weren't taking anything. And so it's just the difference in what we were up against in the mentality. And actually, I know one athlete that I talked to, one who's a coach now, that we've talked to before, has kind of worded things and indicated that they didn't think that we were as dedicated as we should be because we weren't willing to take drugs to lift the most that we possibly could. It's just a different mentality.
So there's coaches out there that are prescribing, like, hey guys, you're gonna do you're gonna do 80% of your 1 RM, you know, snatch 10x1, whatever, right? And then here's your accessory exercises, and also do 10 milliliters of whatever, or 10 milligrams of this, or take 3 D-ball pills. Like, there are coaches in other countries who are basically prescribing it, like, on that level.
That I don't know. I mean, I definitely don't know the specifics. And to say that it's only in other countries, I mean, I'm definitely not saying that. I'm sure there's athletes in everywhere in the U.S. included doing the same stuff. I mean, it's just something that's been proven over time. I mean, you see people doing it over and over and over again. But, you know, the specifics of that, I honestly have no idea. You know, I think a lot of people would be, being that I'm a weightlifter in a sport that's known to take drugs, you know, it's easy to assume that as a CrossFitter, even, we all know something about drugs. And really, all I know about drugs is that it's just something that I've been up against as an athlete basically my whole career, and that's about the extent of it. I mean, you know.
Yeah, the international comment is true in CrossFit as well. We've had confirmed, not cases necessarily, but, like, you know, people that are aware of getting, like, hormone replacement prescriptions in other countries because CrossFitters generally have low testosterone, elevated cortisol from overtraining. So they can go to a doctor, like in Latin America, get prescribed hormone replacement or testosterone enhancement like they would if they were 55, you know. And these are athletes in their, you know, 20s and 30s. And that's confirmed. That's happening. because, like you said, the culture in other areas of the world is different. Like, that scene is like, that's a medical need. So they're going to address that need, even though the athlete's sport is outlawing it. And right now, we're not to the level of USADA, where it's going to be tested once a month for 10 years. That's insane. You know, we're lucky if athletes get tested 3 or 4 times a year.
And it's not USADA. It's a piss test.
And it's a urine test. Right. Yeah. So that's interesting, man, to hear, like, how far it could go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just really, really expensive. And especially the last couple years that I was getting tested, they did start doing random blood tests. So most of that time was a piss test. And then I was, honestly, the first time I got blood tested at home, like, it was a little bit before I was going to have to go train. I was really, really agitated. Like, I understood you're doing what we feel needs to be done. We're trying to make sure that everybody is clean and everything else. But I'm like, you know, I'm competing against these other athletes from other countries that we know are taking drugs, that have said they're taking drugs. And you're in here, like, I feel interrupting my training a little bit, you know, because you're taking some blood from me, you know.
Yeah, like, go test them, man. Like, go test somebody.
Yeah, so it was a little bit difficult. But, yeah, it is expensive, and I'm definitely glad that CrossFit is moving in that direction and that even some athletes are getting tested 3 and 4 times a year. To me, that's a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree. We were talking with EZ about maybe the next step being coming to events like Wadapalooza or, you know, Granite Games or some of these other mid-season events besides the CrossFit Games, and not just looking at the proven Games competitors, but the up-and-comers, the guys who are going to regionals and nearly making it, because those people are largely just fly under the radar, you know. And that's, even if they're not making it, they're taking, the athlete could be taking points away or preventing someone else from getting there.
Yeah, man. As we wrap up, you talked a little bit about getting into shape and, you know, feeling like you move some decent lifts again. You get some master's goals. When is that going to start taking place? What does your training look like maybe for the rest of the year or the season?
Yeah, for right now, I'm basically just trying to, you know, over the last month or so, just trying to really get back into a solid routine. And it's difficult with traveling and everything else. But, you know, if I can maintain at least 3 days a week, if I'm home and I'm feeling good, then maybe I'll throw in a fourth accessory a day or something like that. But, you know, the biggest thing for me at where I'm at now is just making sure, honestly, that I'm getting my strength lifts in, that I'm squatting, that I'm picking up a heavy bar from the floor, that I'm pressing, and then just taking it kind of somewhat easy with the snatch and clean and jerk. My body knows how to snatch and clean and jerk. It's got that, you know, as long as I'm doing that, you know, 1 or 2 times every couple weeks or even 3 weeks, as long as I'm focusing on those strength movements, that's where I'm at right now with that.
What role does, like, CrossFit play or fitness? I'm curious about that. Like, do you see a major advantage in doing CrossFit or some sort of external fitness program in conjunction with weightlifting?
I think there are a lot of weightlifters and maybe all weightlifters that could benefit from using some aspects of CrossFit. I've learned a lot from CrossFit and, you know, with accessories and just a lot of different things. For me, I think it's very important to do maybe 1 or 2 CrossFit workouts a week, and it doesn't have to be anything crazy, but just to, you know, to get some reps in and to keep me moving and to kind of do a little bit of something different with my body. And I think that's very, very beneficial for me. But, I mean, that question, that right there is something we could talk about for a while as well in specifics and stuff like that. One of the things that I'll bring up in that regard is, you know, a lot of even elite U.S. lifters that I know, and females in particular, especially before CrossFit, you know, looking back, now I can see where they struggled and why they struggled, and that they were pretty weak in their upper body and in their core. And I feel like that's why a lot of female CrossFitters in particular are starting to lift very close to the same weight or even more than a lot of our elite lifters, because it's just an area that's typically lacking in a female. I had a base of, you know, powerlifting type stuff in high school from football, so I kind of got lucky where, you know, I got away with not doing a lot of that stuff. But there are a lot of athletes that are imbalanced in that regard, and I know my wife specifically, when she started doing more CrossFit, this was back in 2011, 2012, she was 31, 32 years old, and she started getting a few little PRs here and there in her Olympic lifts, and she wasn't really doing a lot of Olympic lifting. She was just on kind of a competitive CrossFit program, and because of the strength that she gained in her upper body and her core, it took her, you know, a little bit higher. And not that you don't get a lot of upper body work and core work in the Olympic lifts, you do by nature of the movement, but you only have to have a sufficient amount. You know, you don't have to have a strong, really, really strong arms to throw a weight overhead in the jerk if you have strong legs. You just have to be able to lock it out. So, you know, I think there can be an imbalance there, and that's one thing that I have learned and taken from CrossFit.
That's really cool. Like a little correlate to all the handstand push-ups we do, or, you know, different things that we have going on, strict press, push press, and just using them in cycling and Metcons. I was just looking at my hands, and I'm, like, looking at this tape. Have you ever used this stuff, thumbs up tape?
I have not seen
it's
that
not
yet.
It's not a commercial
awesome.
Or anything like that. Nobody paid us to do this, but I'm just, like, looking at it, man. If you get back into weightlifting, try it out. I'm kind of curious to see how it works with heavier loads. Cause
you're going to max your snatch today, right?
Yeah, I'm going to max snatch today, but I like it, man.
All right, Chad, what do you think Ben's going to lift on his max snatch today?
My lifetime PR is 305, but I've got to do a 400-meter sprint beforehand. I've got to help share the load with a 70 squat cleans at 135. Pounds.
You're going to be really warm.
And 40 muscle-ups.
What you're saying is going to be really warmed up.
Yeah, and then I've got a four-minute window.
What do you think? What's he going to get today?
4 minutes. Oh, man, that's a tough call. I mean, I don't know him real well. I'd be, you know, I would think probably you said 305 is your best. You've been training good, feeling good here lately?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say in that moment, I mean, I would expect at least 275. At least 275, all right. Probably a little, you know, maybe a little more, depending on how the stuff right before affects them, but at least 275.
All right, I'm going to say I expect 285.
Wow, I was hoping both of you guys would say, like, about 80%. No.
Hey, not going to let you off that easy.
Not going to let me off easy.
You know you perform well at the very end, time yeah. Clicking down.
Got to do it. Got to do it. Got to get under that bar. So, you know, it's funny, and I'll run this by you. I have a few tricks, you know, because you talked about, like, lifting heavy when you're breathing hard. It's really tough. You know, and it's like what 90% of misses I see in CrossFit, maybe 95% happen right in front of you, right? They're losing the bar as they come down to that bottom position, and they lose that bar in front. So one thing, a simple cue, my wife, who's not an Olympic lifter, she's a coach. She's got her level one from CrossFit, but she's not a weightlifting expert at all. She said, hey, she saw me missing some weights, and I was in competition. She's like, you got to make sure that if you miss, you miss behind you. And so now I just practice, like, just picking up a bar, and I say, that's all right if I miss. I'm just going to make sure I miss behind me. And 90% of the time, if I make that lift, you know what I mean? I mean, if I pull that lift off the floor, I'm going to stick it, you know?
Yeah, I think it definitely makes sense. I mean, I use exaggerations all the time. That's basically most of the cues that I use, and that's exactly what she did. To me, it's beautiful. You know, if you know that 95% of the time when you're tired and you're trying to lift heavy in CrossFit, you're going to miss it forward, it makes sense to me. You know, try to miss it behind, and you might land in the middle.
It's like somebody who's constantly jumping forward in the snatch, right? You just say, hey, why don't you just try jumping backwards once? And then what happens is they
don't move.
They don't move. Or they jump forward less.
That works probably 95% of the time as well. So, yeah, it's a good one too.
All right, Chad. If everyone wants to keep up with you, your coaching, the Power Monkey seminars, where can they find you?
Yeah, definitely we have content and information on powermonkeyfitness.com. You can see us on Instagram there as well. I also have a weightlifting website, vaughnweightlifting.com, where we put out weightlifting-specific programming and other information as well. Same thing on Instagram. And then my personal handle on Instagram is OllyChad, OllyChad.
Awesome. And if you guys want to jump into a pool with Matt Chan or Chris Spieler, then you got to make sure that you are at Wadapalooza next year and in the VIP area. So also, you guys go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. Make sure you search us out on Instagram at BTB Podcast. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks a lot, Chad.
Thanks, guys.